This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
The Woodlawn Cemetery is alive with union protests.
Landscapers at Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx, where six mayors and a whole bunch of jazz legends like Celia Cruz and Miles Davis, Duke Ellington, they're all buried there. Well, there's been protests at the cemetery, and there were union and community allies from throughout New York City. And they were protesting Woodlawn Management's plans to contract out the jobs of the landscapers there to a private landscaping firm unless the workers take a 35% pay cut?
Local 808 Secretary Treasurer Chris Silvera called the proposed outsourcing an act of vengeance against the workers for choosing a fighting union to represent them. It's the latest battle for the workers, the Band of Brothers, who for several years have lodged complaints about racism by supervisors. First up, we go to a recent local 808 demonstration at Woodlawn Cemetery, followed by our interview with Chris Silvera and the Band of Brothers.
We want to thank all of you for the support, every organization, every union, every community group that came out, all the high school students. We have to push back. We have to fight back. We got to let them know that no more are we going to tolerate this in New York City and throughout. Just want to say that these workers here are going to continue to stand up, and I would like for you guys to continue to stand up with us because it doesn't end here.
Long live the Band of Brothers!
Who are we? Teamsters!
We had a union in here that was not representing the men. They were very biased. They were strictly in bed with management, really helping management attack the men. And so we needed to do something about it. And so we decided to organize and get Local 808 and get all these organizations that are here today to work with us, because this isn't just about the Woodlawn Cemetery struggle. This is about a movement in America.
We've been fighting for dignity for quite some time. We've been fighting for respect. We are hard workers. We do more than cut grass. The cemetery is going to lead you to believe that all we do is cut grass and that they can replace us, but that's not true. All right, we do plastering, we do maintenance, we help the entombment department. We're customer service oriented. We talk to people coming in, give them directions. We care for the lots. We really do care for these lots. We need to reach out to the lot owners to take a look at what's going on in here, because management doesn't care about us. They're saying right now the bottom line is money. All right? There's no checks and balances with capitalism. Slavery, how far can they go with capitalism? It depends on us to check it. The checks and balances with capitalism is the people. People power. We have to realize there's a war, and we are the target. If we allow them to keep doing what they're doing, we're going to be in chaos. But it's up to us to keep going forward, standing up, networking, helping each other, all right? You see what they're doing to the students? They're raising tuition. They don't care about us. We have to care about ourselves.
I want to thank the International Action Center, D. I want to thank you, Gab. I want to thank the Band of Brothers. I want to thank everybody that came out. Transport Workers Union, 807, 202, the Joint Council President, 210, 814, DC 37, 804, Victor. The workers in Woodlawn, 98% of them voted to support Local 808 in that election. 98%.
Your life begins to end the day that you stop standing up for what's right. You know, when you stay quiet to the things that matters most. We stood up, and for us speaking out and standing up, they came and attacked us. They discriminated against us. They wanted to treat us like dirt. They didn't want to respect us. But you know what? All we wanted to do was stand up for our rights as workers and now as Teamsters.
Yeah.
We wanted to unionize and organize with a union that's going to stand up and fight for their workers with their workers. We didn't want to continue to suffer the abuse, the harsh conditions, and the kind of treatment and the inactions that they've taken against the workers, especially against our disabled, our sick, our black, our Latino. and our progressive stand-up white brothers who stood up with us. No, we didn't want to take that. We didn't want to have that. So we stood up. For standing up, this is what we get. They say, okay, we're going to lay off 23 out of 38 workers who come here every single day to maintain 400 acres of cemetery land and perform the age-old ritual of burial. And it's a desecration to all those interred and laid to rest that they have to bear silent witness to these kind of treatment to the workers. And so I say, no more.
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 We're not going to take this anymore. We say, respect the dead, respect the workers. Bury the dead, don't bury the workers. Straight ahead.
Hey, Rodimus. Hey, look at Rodimus.
We shall not be moved.
Justice for what, Lord?
We shall not be moved.
We shall not be moved.
We're now joined by Chris Silvera, Secretary Treasurer of Local 808, with Woodlawn members, the Band of Brothers, Todd Brown, Alex Koss, and Enrique Koss.
This is not an uncommon pattern now, taking union jobs and contracting them out. Why don't we begin by the fighting union representative, Chris Silvera, and Chris is indeed a fighting union rep himself. Take us through some of this, and then we'll get to what the jobs have really been about and the complaints of the workers.
Right. Well, let me try to see if we could clear up a couple of things. The Band of Brothers started with three gentlemen who will sit with me, Todd Brown, Enrique Koss, and Alex Koss. But the Band of Brothers, the 38 workers in Woodlawn, are the Band of Brothers because they're all threatened. All of those jobs are threatened. The Band of Brothers is New York City, who will lose tax revenue. It's New York State that's going to lose tax revenue. It's the United States of America that's going to lose tax revenue when and if Woodlawn should prevail in its plan. Those workers were dissatisfied with the union they had at that point. And those workers decided that they wanted some representation that they thought would be more understanding of their struggle. That struggle is not just racial discrimination, it's discrimination on all formats. If you protest in any way, shape, or form, you are punished. So that whether you're Italian, Irish, German, in that cemetery, if you stand up and look management in the eye, you will be punished for that. So that there is a whole-scale assault on the workers because they want to run a plantation. On that plantation are various different people. They're Latinos, they're Italians, they're Irish, they're Germans, they're all types of people. They're African-Americans on that plantation. They want to run it as if this was 1876.
Alex, now this started a while back on a discrimination suit, before that is a charge against management. Take us back to the beginning and what happened there and how did you find it?
In the beginning, when we started filing discrimination charges, it was based on a treatment of a worker of mine, co-worker of mine, Todd Brown, who was being discriminated and treated very harshly by one of the foremen, and complaints were made and never went anywhere with these complaints. And the former union that we had there was told many times about this, and nothing happened with them. So we decided, you know, there's something got to be done. And so we filed charges. We did what we had to do. But basically, this has been a very big fight for us, and which is why we had to try to find a solution, which is bring Teamsters Local 808 in there.
Todd, since you're here with us, walk us through some of what you thought was the kind of degradation or the discrimination that you experienced. And by the way, how many years have you worked at Woodlawn?
I've been there 6 years now.
And what kind of work do you do?
I do landscaping, cut grass. I've helped out with entombments, interments, all sorts of different various jobs we've done.
And you're accomplished at your job?
Oh, yes. I am right now. Also drive trucks, and I'm very skilled at what I do.
So what happened to you that provoked people to file complaints for discrimination?
First of all, you know, my first day there, there's very few African-Americans there. and most of the foremen are white, non-minority. And I heard my foreman call another African-American, "Hey, nigga, come here." You know, they've called me nigga, spare chucker. One foreman in particular was very demeaning to me. He used to look me up and down, "Hey, nigga, spare chucker." You know, he would always try to get me to do the most hardest jobs, you know. And then after a while, like I said, my coworker Alex, he spoke up on my behalf. There was a lot of complaints. But one of the things I noticed there was discrimination as far as when minorities were in a certain position and seniority, they would either eliminate that position or manipulate it in such a way where that minority couldn't get that position. It wouldn't be a primary position. It would be just a, let's say if there was an entombment mechanic, they would eliminate that position to make that a worker. What is it? What'd you call it?
Yeah, worker. Wouldn't give them the full title, the regular title of the position.
And lower,
which is a vault mechanic.
Yeah, they also they'll lower the pay. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I got tired of that, and we stepped to management about how the minorities felt, and those cries were ignored. And so we filed grievances, group grievances, and then we filed charges with EOC, and the company just said it had no merit, and we've been fighting ever since.
My ears are ringing, and my anger and my blood is boiling at what you tell me. Right here, you have greats like Celia Cruz, and you have the jazz greats in this place. Darn. Tell us some more about the work you do, and we're going to find out how not only was management seething at the complaints and the fight back, but then how they went ballistic over the fact that you got a fighting union who respects its workers. My brother?
Yeah, this is Rick Koss commenting right now, and I just wanted to say something about what Todd was saying. You know, there has been a climate that has existed there for quite some time, for many years.
And how long have you worked there?
I've worked there since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
When I started and I came in, I could just feel the tension in the air. But, you know, I'm the new kid on the block, so I wanted to be able to just, you know, pass my trial, my probationary period, and, you know, get a chance to learn the lay of the land, you know, see how things work. But I did see, you know, many things that were not right. Again, because I'm the new guy, I needed to just sort of like try to, you know, do the best that I can because I was new on the job and whatnot. Basically, this thing existed for such a long time. I believe many of the workers were oppressed, you know, whether they were African-American, Irish, German, so on and so forth, you know, but it's a lot easier for those, you know, who are not of color. And it's harder for, you know, for it to be accepted. But nevertheless, management has maintained a level of control through oppressing the workers. And it was only then that Todd and Alex, you know, began to raise the issue as well as myself. I guess it was the courage and whatnot that we were able to have to raise the issue. But nevertheless, this is a labor issue in which when you stand up, doesn't matter what you're standing up for when you stand up, especially when you're exercising your labor rights. This management team that exists there today, they tend to retaliate against you.
And part of the retaliation seems to be that management is up the ante at this point. You've got a new union in, you're fighting. I think you're making some progress on the discrimination front. And now they want to contract out the job. So who wants to take over on that?
Let me say that the threat in terms of subcontracting the work is that they would actually like to get rid of these three gentlemen right here. And in order to get rid of these three gentlemen, they have to impact 20 others. So that this is a vendetta of the highest order. Not only do they know, it was 98% of the workers that voted Local 808 into power there. So that clearly there was, that discrimination was a broader sense of oppression that was taking place there. And so the company now has threatened to outsource this work to a company called Brickman. Brickman's modus operandi is to use workers from outside of the country to come in as guest workers on these H-2B
visas.
They'll
be here on special visas.
Which creates what is really indentured servitude, because if you don't like what Brickman does, you either go back home. You can't come and work for somebody else while you're here. You can't quit and go and work someplace else, you are bound to Brickman for the duration of that contract, or you have to leave the country. But to say that this is part of a broader struggle of workers in America in totality, I mean, labor needs to rally around this Woodlawn situation, and labor needs to push back. We need to have it be that, you know, at the end of this struggle, people could say that the pushback against Cuomoism, Bloombergism started in Woodlawn, and the pushback against this capitalist onslaught of workers, you know, the same way that we found billions of dollars to rescue banks and so forth. We need to find that same political resolve to support workers.
One of the things I was just thinking about since the last demonstration was on Martin Luther King. Ken and I were on air, and of course, the last battle effectively of Martin Luther King was to support the public workers, the sanitation workers of Memphis, which, and I vividly remember the pictures of what the sanitation workers were carrying. They had one major sign that said, "I am a man."
Yes.
It's about, of course it's about wages and not accepting the cut of 35%, but it's about dignity and humanity on the job. And as I knew you folks were having your demonstration, we were, you know, secretly or not so secretly, but empathetically saying, right on, power to the people. Indeed, we are men and we are workers. And I concur completely with what you're saying. Now, but pity the downtrodden cemetery owners. Pity them. My God, what they're saying to us is, hey, wait a minute. There's more. People are getting cremated. The costs are too expensive. What are we to do as these workers? They're responsible for it all.
Right, but if
workers go up, pensions go up. I am, of course, baiting you, but this is their response, and I want to know what you say to these guys. I'm sorry about that, Ken. It's really coming out now.
If you look at the pricing structure between in-ground burial versus cremation and being put, it's the dollar difference is very minimal, so that there's probably more profit in cremations than there is in actual in-ground
funeral. And the boss
funeral.
Makes how much comparatively to the workers?
Well, the president makes $300,000 a year.
Patash.
Right? Each individual board member makes about $25,000 a year to attend a board meeting, which I believe they say averages out over the year to 1 hour per week. Yes. Right? So if you do the math on what's going on there, that $750,000 that they talk about saving every year not only comes out of their pocket, but it comes out of the community, because these gentlemen are, and their families are going to need Medicaid. They're going to need unemployment. They're probably going to end up needing welfare. They could very well end up being homeless.
I sincerely hope
they're probably
not
going to end up jumping a turnstile and get locked up, so that they're taking $750,000 out of circulation. There's actually a multiplier effect on that money. The bar loses money, therefore I got to lay off somebody. The deli loses money, I got to lay off somebody. So that there is a global negative effect. The Bronx is the poorest urban county in America, and Woodlawn Cemetery is about to exacerbate that. And we need the city council members, we need the state assembly people to step up and take a stand.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I mean,
And we're listening to Alex now.
Yeah. You know, it's very unfair when you want to get rid of 23 workers from a 400-acre cemetery. I'm talking about half of Central Park. I mean, the workers have been a history of the Woodlawn Cemetery. If you look at the landscaping there, it wasn't just, you know, it didn't just fall there. That was created by the workers.
And it really is gorgeous. I know people who were talking about, literally people who take trips there just to see the historic graves, and it's a remarkably gorgeous
sight. Yeah, I mean,
it's
a beautiful place. I mean, it's so serene in there. I mean, 23 guys, okay, that they want to get rid of, and like I said, it's 400 acres, and we take care of that land. We do the best we can, whatever tools they give us to take care of that land. And I got to say, we never get complaints from customers unless there's maybe a sinkhole or something. You know, that just happens naturally during time. You know, the dirt will just cave in a little. But we do what we can. with the 23 guys, and we do a lot more than just landscaping.
But can I just touch on something? Because today in negotiations, the company in 2004 had 48. They used to have 38 full-time workers and 20 what they call seasonals. Those seasonals work 28 weeks out of the year. They decided they didn't want to do the seasonal model anymore, and there was only one woman that ever came and worked in Woodlawn, in the landscaping department, and because of a complaint that she filed, they actually eliminated all of the seasonals.
That's a nice way to respond.
There are no women. There
you
are
just
no
eliminate,
women.
Right.
Exactly. There are no women working in Woodlawn inside of the 38 people who are involved in the, what are called field operations. So today at the bargaining table, the head of HR actually confessed that they are below manning. So when they're talking about getting rid of these people and outsourcing, they are actually admitting that the 38 workers, and particularly the 23 that are involved in landscaping directly, those people are overworked. Because you're talking about almost 20 acres per individual, right? Intense. Now, you think of 20 acres that you have to take care of every day.
I have trouble watering my plants.
You have, exactly. So if you understand that there's leaves to be, you know, most of this is very, because of tombs and so forth, you have to use weed whackers and what have you. They actually had an author that came in there and worked there for just a couple of hours. He says he couldn't handle this.
Yeah.
They work in the rain. They were in the snow. They, you know, all manner of conditions, they're out there. And the company recognizes, instead of saying, you guys deserve a raise of pay, they're saying that for your insolence and looking me in the eye and standing up, our punishment is to banish you.
You know, it's just amazing to me that, you know, I look at it like this. The men have been asking for help and because of the hostile working environment there. And community groups have reached out to John Toll, the president of the cemetery, and the board of directors. And there has been no real response. They did an independent investigation, but Alex wasn't a part of that investigation. There's a lot of things wrong with that investigation. That investigation is not made public.
It wasn't independent, though. That was the company's investigation of itself. It was no independent investigation.
Which is absolutely true. But even after that investigation, now all of a sudden you want to get lay off the guys? Instead of, you know, that place is not managed correctly. There's a lot of money lost because of mismanagement. They're too focused on retaliating than to be worried about the work.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, the bottom line is that when you organize a place that has always been used to being oppressed, and you organize them to unionize with a very good union such as Local 808, you know, you get a lot of first-time things going on. You know, the first time we have a good solid union, the first time we're able to speak out on things. Management sort of, you know, they become tense, like, uh-oh, we're being pushed back for the first time. They've never had to face, you know, having to have guys, you know, stand up and speak out for their rights. The bottom line is, you know, when you threaten 23, you know, workers, you're threatening 23 families. You're taking away food from 23 children. And this is a destruction to many people within the Bronx, many people in the community. And it's also a desecration of those who lay to rest to bear witness to the kind of treatments that the workers get. They should respect not just the dead, but respect the workers who toil day in and day out to keep that place beautified.
How do they do that? How do people help you? How especially the people who own plots in Woodlawn? Because I understand that they really own the cemetery, help you.
Now, here's what's been going on. Over the years, management has gotten these people, when they sell them the lots, to give over their proxy voting rights to the management. And that there actually needs to be an investigation by the Attorney General into the practices of cemeteries and getting the lot owners to sign over. You know, when you come in to bury, you're not thinking that you're going to be engaged with management or determining the future and what have you. And you're mourning. You're vulnerable. So all of a sudden, somebody says, you know, just sign right here and, you know, we'll take care of this. And you're thinking it's about mowing the lawn, not realizing that you're actually a part of the oppression of workers unknowingly and unwittingly. And there needs to be, in order to get democracy back into the cemetery, there needs to be an investigation by the Attorney General on the practices of cemeteries, not just Woodlawn, but Woodlawn in particular, because this is where this is the forefront of the struggle.
Alec?
It's not just about the discrimination that's going on there. It's also about the workers getting together. There's a pushback against workers in this country, and workers need to, like you say, we need to get out there and we need to say, you know what, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take this. And we need to push forward. All the workers need to remember that it's not just black and white issues. It's not just big and small issues. You know, it's about getting together and letting them know that this is our job and we want to keep it. And we want to keep pushing forward and we want to keep working there and do what we got to do without anybody discriminating, without anybody harassing us, without anybody making us feel like we're very low. We want to make sure that everybody there is not afraid anymore. We have local 808 Teamsters there, and we want the workers to know, don't be afraid anymore. Stand up. You have rights. And we want to thank all the organizations that were there on Monday, Martin Luther King's birthday, and they were very helpful, and we stand by them also.
That's thank right.
You. Thank all you. Right. Do you have a slogan? What's the slogan?
Bury the dead.
Not the workers.
Bury the dead, not the workers, right?
How do people contact you for more information?
They could call Teamsters Local 808 at 718-389-1900 or 1-800-761-8225.
Band of Brothers, Todd Brown, Alex Koss, Enrique Koss, Chris Silvera. That slogan again, 1, 2, 3.
Bury the dead, not the workers.
Right on, and that's exactly what we're going to do. We support you fully, and we're going to make sure all of our listeners do. Thank you. It is always our honor to have people in struggle on. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash, and log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.